Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Sally Fallon as my special expert guest. Sally Fallon Morrell is founding president of the Weston A. Prowse Foundation, a nonprofit nutrition education foundation with over 400 local chapters worldwide, helping consumers find local grass-based animal products. Sally is also the founder of a campaign for real milk, which has as its goal universal access to clean raw milk from pasture-fed animals. Sally is the president and owner of New Trends Publishing, serving as editor and publisher of many books including Nourishing Traditions, The Cholesterol Myths, The Untold Story of Milk, The Yoga of Eating, The Fourfold Path to Healing, The Whole Soy Story, and Eat Fat, Lose Fat. Sally received a bachelor's degree in English with honors from Stanford University and a master's degree in English with high honors from UCLA. In addition to speaking French and Spanish, Sally is a journalist, chef, nutrition researcher, homemaker, and community activist. Her interests include music, gardening, metaphysics, and cooking. Good morning, Sally. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Oh, thank you, Corey. I wish I actually had time for those interests, but I don't.
Well, we never have enough of that, do we? And
no.
We get so busy and involved, but I really sense in you and from reading your bio and your work that you are very, very passionate and very committed to what you do. So maybe you could tell us something about yourself, your background, such as where you were born and raised, and how you got into this field that has captured your interest.
Well, I'm a Californian. I was born and raised in California, and from my early days, I was always interested in cooking. I had come from a family of people who loved to cook. And I was always interested in nutrition, and I had a life-changing moment when I read Dr. Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. That was in the early 70s. I raised my children according to the principles in that book and experiment on them, and it really worked. They were very healthy. They didn't need braces. They didn't suffer from any of the health problems that I had suffered from when I was growing up. I then got the idea of putting those two things together, my love for cooking and the principles that Dr. Price found in healthy traditional diets, into a book called Nourishing Traditions, and the rest is history. That book has sold and sold and sold. It's been a big influence. And then when I finished the book, I joined forces with Dr. Mary Enig and some other health seekers to found the Weston A. Price Foundation, which is a nutrition information foundation. We try to provide accurate, unbiased information. We have no ties with the food industry, so we can tell the truth.
Now, the foundation is actually not for profit, and so it sort of remains clean and non-biased and not prejudiced because it's not as influenced by capitalism, say, maybe as a private organization. Would that be true?
That's correct. Our mission is to provide the scientific validation for traditional food ways, and we have a particular focus on children, on preconceptual diets, on the diets of pregnant and nursing women, and the diets of children during growth. Because this is what Dr. Price found, that there was a tremendous emphasis on the diets for building a healthy body in these traditional cultures. They all had special foods for pregnant women and growing children, and these foods were the very foods we've been told not to eat, foods like liver, butter from grass-fed cows, certain fish liver oils, fish eggs, shellfish, eggs, and especially egg yolks. All of the nutrient-dense, high-cholesterol, high-fat foods that have been demonized are the foods that we show are extremely necessary if you want to have healthy children.
Yeah, and I think that's so wonderful because I'm a father and a grandfather, and I absolutely know how important it is to me to have healthy, well children free of disease and infection. And I think that all parents would want that. But the way that people feed their kids and themselves prior to even conception is probably what you want to do, is change that and then prove that and validate that and make it clear to people that eating a different way is better. Now, can you tell us something about Dr. Price, that for those people who maybe who never heard of him or don't know about his work?
Well, Dr. Price was actually a dentist, and he was very interested in dental health. He wanted to know what kind of diet prevented cavities and also ensured that growing children had straight teeth. And so he spent 10 years traveling around the world and looking at healthy, isolated populations and trying to figure out what kind of diet would ensure the right kind of growth, freedom from cavities, and by inference, good overall health. And as I said, these were diets that emphasized these nutrient-dense animal foods. These are the foods that we need to get back into our diets to have healthy children. And you know, we're not just talking about physical health here. We're talking about connections in the brain. Children need cholesterol and choline for their brains to develop normally. And where do we get cholesterol and choline? We get it from liver and animal fats and particularly egg yolks. Once again, all the foods that we're being told not to eat.
Yes, and now I want you to know that I'm right on the same page, that the diet you described that I learned through research and through studying much of Dr. Price's work, and also Ronald Schmidt became a mentor for me. Traditional Food is Your Best Medicine, one of the best books I've read. I've read your book, too. All of this comes together with anthropology and paleontology and the science, that if you use science, as you know, you get a whole different picture. So maybe you could summarize some of the basic principles that kind of go against the current dogma. People are being told one thing, and yet you're telling them another, and not just you personally, but the evidence you have. So what is it you're basically trying to get across?
Well, the number one finding of Dr. Price was that these traditional diets were extremely high in three particular vitamins. They were high in all the vitamins, but these particular three, vitamins A, D, and vitamin K2, the animal form of vitamin K. And these are the vitamins that are required for basically everything in the body, but particularly for building strong bones and having a healthy facial structure and for the endocrine system to work and for you to have healthy reproduction. And these are found, once again, in organ meats and certain types of seafoods and in the fats of grass-fed animals. And this is why we put so much emphasis on grass feeding of animals, not because of omega-3s and certainly not because the fat is lean, because the meats are lean. We don't want lean meats. We want fatty meats. But because when you have these animals on grass, you have more vitamin A, more vitamin D, more vitamin K in the egg yolks, in the butterfat, in the organ meats. And we've actually tested and compared, and it's an order of magnitude higher when you put these animals outside on green grass in the sunlight.
So it is true, we are what we eat eats.
Yeah. Yes, well, certainly our body's health is what we eat, for sure.
Now, there's so much controversy, and I think what makes it confusing is when someone hears you say it's okay to eat cholesterol and liver and dairy, the next phase or level of understanding is to separate the wheat from the chaff. And so maybe you could speak on the differences between eating animals that are grass-fed and eating ones that are not. Like, what is the difference between eating a cow today, say a sirloin steak on your plate, and maybe eating some moose or some antelope or some wild game?
Well, I have nothing against cow. I think it's a wonderful meat. And the advantage of beef is it has so much good fat in it, good marbling fat. And this is what the traditional peoples wanted. They often threw the lean meats of the elk or the deer away and just saved the fat. So that is the advantage of beef. But the difference between the steak today and the steak, you know, 100 years ago is that the steak today is probably corn-fed or raised in a system that uses a lot of antibiotics, a lot of chemicals, and so forth. And once again, there will be far lower amounts of nutrients in the confinement-fed animal products.
Right, so the way they're eating, as in the animals, is affecting their health, and ultimately what we have access to is not the same thing. Like, for example, you're promoting raw milk, and a lot of us have been programmed to think that if we were to do that, we'd wind up with tuberculosis and mass infection, and of course that has to do with what the dairy industry has done. So, I mean, this leads us into a very important area, because you think that it's okay to drink raw milk and raw milk from grass-fed cows. Why can't we find raw milk as easily as we once could?
You know, I think I need to clarify here. We promote the consumption of what we call real milk. That is milk that's raw, that's full fat, and it comes from grass-fed animals. And if you're missing any of those components, we don't endorse it. So it has to be all three things together. And what's happened over the years, the dairy industry, in order to consolidate its strength and to prevent the farmers from having any other outlet for their milk but the actual industry, has demonized raw milk, has put out a lot of lies about it, has done a lot of phony reports about it, alleging illnesses caused by raw milk, and none of this is true. And we have taken great pains to put the science together to show that raw milk is extremely safe and much, much healthier than pasteurized milk. And we have a secondary website called realmilk.com and some very important documents right on the homepage of that website.
Oh, that's wonderful. I really enjoyed reading The Untold Story of Milk by Dr. Schmidt, and I think that should be a must-read by everyone in nutrition, because that really sums it up. I think you were involved in editing and publishing that book as well?
That's correct, and we've just come out with a second edition. We particularly updated the chapter on children and the chapter on raw milk safety because we had so much new material, and that's available from newtrendspublishing.com. And as I say, this is a rapidly growing movement. More and more people are discovering raw milk. They're discovering that they have been lied to about raw milk. Raw milk is becoming more available. For example, in Washington State, you can buy it in stores. This is the movement of the 21st century, and I believe that raw milk is where organics was 20 years ago, you know, a kind of fringe movement, but poised to become mainstream very quickly.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, a lot of people have milk in the fridge, and they drink a lot of it, and they feed it to their kids. What happens when we consume pasteurized, sterilized skim milk? What's the downside of that?
Oh, many downsides. First of all, it's extremely hard to digest. Pasteurization makes it hard to digest, and when you take the fat out, it's even harder to digest. And the result is that people are actually not drinking it as much as they used to. Milk consumption relentlessly declining at 1% per year. And, you know, we have a lot of so-called lactose intolerant. And we did a survey and found that 82% of people who had been diagnosed as lactose intolerant could drink raw milk without any problem whatsoever. So this is a wonderful, healthy food, particularly good food for growing children. And we need to get this food back into our households.
Absolutely. When we were traveling in our RV, as soon as I got to California, I went to Whole Foods and bought some raw milk and guzzled it down because I'm a type B. I love milk, and the fat, I know, doesn't make me fat. I'm an athlete and very active, but it makes me well and whole. So maybe you could comment on the view people have. Well, if I eat all that fat, I'm going to get fat, but it would seem that they're not doing that and they're getting fat anyway. So what's going on?
Well, if you eat the wrong fats, you'll get fat. And the wrong fats are trans fats and vegetable oils. And the reason you get fat is because these processed fats are empty and your body says, whoops, you haven't fed me, and just keeps craving more food. So these tend to be mostly hidden fats. The good fats like butter and meat fats and egg yolks and coconut oil are very good for the metabolism. They actually speed up your metabolism. And so you can eat more and not gain weight. And the problem is when people restrict fat consumption is the body needs these fats so badly that it starts to crave carbohydrates because the body rapidly turns carbohydrates into fat. So that's why people tend to gain weight on low-fat diets or the wrong fat diets.
Right. Excellent. We recently moved to Hawaii and we're consuming a lot of raw coconut. And the coconuts here are almost the staple diet for some of the local people. But you know how you sip out the juice inside and you take the coconut. Well, I actually recommended this to somebody with psoriasis, and they started eating the coconut, chunks of it, and in about 2 weeks, a miracle of healing occurred. They made no changes except that they just started eating that coconut, that fresh, beautiful coconut. So it just proves out the fact that fat, healing fats, living fats, are highly beneficial to us, aren't they?
They absolutely are, and this story doesn't surprise me. We hear daily from people who have had their health improved by getting more good fats in the diet. Well, you know, there's a wonderful story out there on the internet about a man who had Alzheimer's, and his wife gave him coconut oil, and he didn't recover 100%, but he recovered about 90%.
Isn't that amazing? That's wonderful. And of course, as I know and you know, that the fat is largely found in the brain, and it requires fats and omega-3s and essential fats and these fat-soluble vitamins, which you really made clear that it's not just the omega-3, but it's the vitamins that are fat-soluble in the fats that we need more of. Could you explain why so many people are vitamin D deficient because of this omission of proper fats?
Yes, but just to finish our last thought there, there's an omega-6 fatty acid that's extremely important for your skin and your brain, and it's called arachidonic acid, and that is found in meat fats and butter. So that's a kind of neglected one. In fact, that's also been demonized. It's said to cause inflammation, which is not correct. You know, back in 1929, there was a study done on vitamin D. And they found that the most powerful source of vitamin D, the most effective source was cod liver oil, and the second most effective source was egg yolks, but only if these egg yolks came from chickens raised in bright sunlight. So what have we done in the past 50 years? No one takes cod liver oil anymore except crazy people from the Weston A. Price Foundation. People aren't eating egg yolks anymore because the government has told them they're bad for them. And if they are eating the egg yolks, they're getting the conventional confinement-raised egg yolks, which don't have much vitamin D in them. So it's two things that have happened: the demonization of foods that contain vitamin D, and then the industrialization of agriculture has made vitamin D disappear from the food supply. And when you ask our government about vitamin D, they will say, you cannot get vitamin D from food. Now, that's ridiculous. By the way, we just had some grass-fed lard analyzed for vitamin D, and there were about 1,000 international units of vitamin D per tablespoon in the grass-fed lard. There is your solution. Just cook in grass-fed lard. You'll get a couple thousand units of vitamin D every day, which is about what you need.
Yes, and so it's not simply a matter of continuing on in the wrong direction, eating the wrong food, and taking a vitamin D supplement. What you're saying is you've got to change your food base.
Right. You really need to get all of these vitamins from food. Otherwise, you end up with a lot of imbalances and the wrong form of the vitamin. And we are not pill pushers and vitamin pushers. We really recommend spending that money on good food.
Now, I've read your book, Nourishing Traditions, and I think it should be a staple in everyone's library. But maybe you can tell us a little bit about the book and what we could expect by reading it to obtain in terms of information.
Well, Nourishing Traditions is actually a cookbook. It's a full-spectrum cookbook that contains everything from soup recipes to baby formula recipes. And it also contains a lot of very concise information about nutrition. What can I say? It's what they call in the business a perennial. It just sort of steadily sells and sells. It's all been by word of mouth. I also have a seminar, a recorded seminar, a DVD on nourishing traditional diets. It's about 5 hours long, and that is available from New Trends Publishing. And I also have a DVD called The Oiling of America, which talks about the cholesterol myth and saturated fats and why we should not believe what they're telling us about them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And what do you mean? In your subtitle, you say the book challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. Now, what do you mean by diet dictocrats?
Well, these are the various governmental and establishment medical agencies that are all telling us the same thing: low fat, high fiber, high carbohydrate, take vitamin pills. Those are the diet dictocrats, the ones who've demonized the healthy traditional foods.
And so what do you think about the new My Pyramid that was put up by the USDA?
It's led to a health crisis of enormous proportions, and we are actually working on an alternative dietary guidelines. Every time they ask for testimony on this, we do testify and talk about how ridiculous it is. I mean, for one thing, it's led to an obesity crisis, a diet based on 6 to 11 servings of grain, bread, pasta, and crackers every day. Is a diet that's going to make you gain weight.
Absolutely. Isn't that a sure way to fatten up cattle, is to put them on a high-grain diet?
Exactly. And that USDA has cattle fattening pyramid that looks very much like the one that they're giving to the people.
That's wonderful. That's great.
I don't want to think that they just can never eat grains or never eat carbohydrates. You know, I eat probably one serving of grains per day and maybe one other serving of carbohydrate foods. People who are athletes and exercising a lot, they can eat more carbohydrate foods. We like to be inclusive, and we don't like to say you can't eat this or you can't eat that.
Understood. And then I would imagine that you would promote whole grains as opposed to the refined processed alternative.
Well, whole grains, but with a very important caveat, because whole grains can do a lot of damage unless they've been properly prepared by soaking or sourdough fermentation. We have an epidemic of celiac disease in this country, and it's because people are eating whole grains in the wrong way. So once again, we don't say don't eat whole grains, but we say here is how to prepare your grains so that you can eat them.
Very good point. What do you think about brown rice or spelt or amaranth and quinoa, these types of rices and grains that were used by other peoples in different regions of the planet?
Well, brown rice is the most digestible of that list. And when my family was growing up, we had brown rice several times a week. But you do need to soak it or cook it in a mineral-rich stock or something to overcome the phytic acid content of brown rice.
I would imagine that you're into soups and using the bones and animal parts for these healthy soups.
We are big promoters of bone broths for many reasons. They help with digestion. They keep your joints and cartilage healthy. They help with detoxification. They help with healthy bones. And they make delicious soups and stews and sauces.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, Tracy, my wife, she is really into making hearty soups. And we have organs on a regular basis. And, you know, that's another point that maybe you can comment on is the people say, oh, the liver, you know, that's where everything's processed and it's a holding station for all the toxins. How do you respond to that?
Well, the liver is not a storage organ. And the liver produces a lot of enzymes that help you deal with toxins. And should come from a healthy grass-fed animal, but the liver is a sacred food in many, many populations, and it is just a powerhouse of nutrients. You know, there's 10 to 100, even to 1,000 times more nutrients in liver than there are in plant foods.
Yes, and so ultimately your message is don't be afraid of animal foods, but make sure they're coming from reliable sources. Make sure you know what they're being fed, and then a little mixing of the two, of plant and animal. But ultimately, to move and to, I guess, simulate a similar lifestyle to the hunting, gathering, fishing, farming kind of groove?
Well, certainly their eating habits. None of us wants to go back and live in a primitive village, at least I don't. But our bodies are the same as they were hundreds of years ago, and they still need the same nutrients. And so the traditional cultures have a lot to teach us about how to eat.
Yes, and so you would say also then that the kind of diet you're promoting is genetically compatible with the human genome?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And isn't that an important factor? Now, what is your opinion on soy?
Well, we have been a major voice warning the public about the dangers of soy foods, particularly the modern processed soy foods. In Asia, soy was used as a condiment in small amounts, and it was processed in such a way as to remove as much as possible the irritants and the anti-nutrients. And if you want to eat soy that way, that's fine, but that's not how it's being consumed here. Soy is a toxic plant. There is no other way to put it. It's full of poisons, and you cannot entirely remove these poisons, even with fermentation. And the modern processing to make soy protein and textured vegetable protein, this kind of stuff, actually adds a lot of toxins. And then we use soy protein isolate as the major ingredient in soy formula, soy infant formula. And as a nation, we have lost our way if we are giving such a toxic component to growing children.
Right, and so I guess a better format also is fermented soy, like tempeh or miso or tofu, as opposed to...
Well, tofu is not fermented. Tempeh or miso or natto, but you have to understand, these were not consumed in large amounts. In surveys of Asian diets, they were not more than 1% to 2% of total calories in these diets.
What about all of the stuff on the isoflavones and reducing risk of breast cancer in women or prostate cancer in men? Is there any truth to that?
They certainly don't reduce the risk of breast cancer. we were able to stop a cancer health claim for soy protein by showing that the soy increases the risk of breast cancer.
Wow.
These isoflavones are estrogens. They lower testosterone in men. They cross the placenta. They cause changes in behavior in test animals, disrupted mating behaviors. In test animals exposed to soy when they're very young, even at very low levels, they cause strange behavior patterns, increased anxiety, less social contact. Does this sound a little bit like autism to you? We are hearing from people working with autistic children that almost 100% of these children were raised on soy formula. Another big concern of ours is the manganese content in soy. Now, manganese is an important mineral, but it's toxic to infants and can poison their brains. And the symptoms of manganese toxicity are identical to the symptoms of autism. There is just no excuse for this soy formula to be on the market. And the only reason it is because the industry is extremely powerful.
What are we to do now? We're almost, in a sense, isolated in our own world. There's a huge weight of the world sometimes that we feel we carry like a burden within our own family, with our friends and colleagues who might think we're nuts and crazy for eating this way. How do you manage yourself in your world with your family? Like, you live in Washington, which probably doesn't eat, you know, according to the methodology that you, advise or warn people against. So how do you manage that?
Well, we have no trouble getting good food. We have no trouble getting raw milk, and that's the way we eat. And we just stand as examples to people, and then if they want the information, we provide it to them. I'm very fortunate in that my children are, you know, right on board with this, and my husband, and so that's very helpful. But I know it's very difficult if you're in a family where you're the only one eating this way. But I would just say, be confident, keep your mouth shut, and show people by example.
That is very good advice, and of course, to surround yourself with education and information such as what you provide at the foundation.
Exactly, and we have wonderful educational materials, little flyers and booklets that put this all in very concise form. If you go to our website, WestonAPrice.org, and look at our order page, you can see a lot of these materials. If you become a member, you get one of each of our pamphlets and materials, and that includes our shopping guide.
And what is the membership fee for an individual, somebody that's got a business, maybe they're a personal trainer or in the health field?
It's $40 and $50 if you're in Canada or overseas, $25 if you are a senior or a student.
Okay, and that sounds quite reasonable, and that will get everyone connected to the foundation. And
you get a journal for that, so a quarterly, quite a big magazine, actually.
Oh, a nice journal. Is that available online, or is that mailed out?
It's mailed out. This is a 100-page magazine, so it's mailed out, but we also put every single article from the journal online.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's excellent. Okay, so everybody out there and everyone listening, WestonAPrice.org for the website to the Weston A. Price Foundation. Just a marvelous amount of information that you've made available to us. We could go on and on and on. I guess our time is gone. It's already been 30 minutes. It's just absolutely amazing. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me, and I just invite your listeners to go to WestonAPrice.org and have some fun on the website.
Then, what is your maybe a final parting comment for this year, this 2010, this new age that we're in with all this technology and all this confusion? What is your best advice to somebody that's in the health field or launching a new career in it and looking for information and education to help them?
Well, I would say eat the way your great-grandparents ate. Not your parents, not your grandparents, but your great-grandparents.
Great. Sally Fallon is a pioneer in this remarkable field of nutrition and health. She is an activist for teaching people worldwide through her books and work how to eat and live well. Sally, we thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Corey. Appreciate it.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with sports nutrition update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.